Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. I hope everybody is doing well on this rather dreary, cloudy afternoon. Now, we are going to discuss the issues that are going on with Syria, what's happening with these refugee camps in Jordan, and the ensuing prostitution, forced marriages that are going on. But, of course, I do have to address what happened in London, in the UK. Yesterday afternoon. My heart goes out to the people in the UK for this tragedy, the beheading of the soldier in Woolwich. He has since been identified. His name was Lee Rigby. He was a drummer in the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. He, like I say, a 25-year-old soldier who served in Afghanistan. He leaves behind a son, a 2-year-old son. Now, everybody has heard this Islamic terrorist speaking into the cell phone. Now, you didn't hear the full text. I want to thank Poppy for sending this to me first and foremost because I just got it now. But what you heard in the sound clips was not everything that he had to say. What you heard was him beginning with, there are many, many. There's a lot that you did not hear, which was intentionally edited to mislead you that this was indeed an Islamic terrorist act. The full context of what he said was, there are many, many ayah throughout the Quran, and he is referring to religious verses, that says we must fight them as they fight us. An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth. I apologize that women had to witness this today, but in our land, women have to see the same. You people will never be safe. Remove your government. They don't care about you. So what they were doing, the media, of course, they were spinning it. They omitted the references to Islam. They also omitted the fact that he was yelling, Allah Akbar, as he was butchering this poor soldier to death. After, of course, they ran him down with a car. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Like I say, I'm not going to do a whole lot on it. I might have a show tomorrow where I have a few more notes put together, but I want to talk about, like I say, I really want to talk about Syria. And just to give you a little bit of a background about Syria, I'm not going to bore you with a whole lot of details, but just to give you an idea of what's happening in Syria and why there is such an issue with what's going on with the women of Syria of today. Now, what is happening in Syria? Okay, well, the violence in Syria, it began in March of 2011, and since then an estimated 70,000 people have died in the clashes between President Bashar al-Assad's government and the rebel forces who want him out. Now, in July of 2012, the International Red Cross said the violence in Syria had become so widespread that it was in a state of civil war. And if you look at the news footage, I'm sure you will agree with that. But what's the reason behind the violence? And what's going to be done to stop it from getting any worse? Well, first of all, how did the protests start? Well, like I'm telling you, 2011. The trouble began. It began in the city of Dera. Locals, they took to the streets to protest after 15 school children had been arrested, and apparently there are reports that they were also tortured. They were writing anti-government graffiti on a wall. Now, the protests, they were peaceful to begin with. They were calling for the kids' release, democracy, and greater freedom for people in the country. Now, the government, they responded angrily, and on the 18th of March of 2011, the army, they opened fire on protesters, and they killed four people. Well, the following day, they shot at mourners at the victims' funerals, and they killed another person. And people were shocked and angry at what had happened. And soon, the unrest had spread to other parts of the country. So, what do the protesters want? And what have they got? At first, the protesters, they just wanted democracy and greater freedom. But once security forces opened fire on peaceful demonstrations, people demanded that the president, Bashar al-Assad, he resigned. He refused, of course, to step down. Now, the violence has worsened. He has offered to change some things about the way the country is run, but protesters, they don't believe him. But he does still have quite a lot of people in Syria that still support him and his government. But Syria is essentially being left on its own because there is very little help from other countries. The United Nations, they have been very critical of the violence, and they did send in peace monitors into Syria in April of 2012 as part of a peace plan, but they had to pull out because it was just too dangerous. They could not afford the casualties that they were garnering. They weren't happy to garner them, but they were. So they pulled out. Now, they haven't sent any troops into Syria since. And for that to happen, all member countries of the UN would have to agree. But Russia and China have so far blocked any moves to do this. They have strong ties with President Assad and the Syrian government. So what's going to happen next? Well, it doesn't look like the fighting is going to end anytime soon. Neither the Free Syrian Army nor the government forces have been able to defeat the other. And it seems unlikely that Syrian government troops will ever be able to regain full control of the country, guys. Now the British government says it will provide armored vehicles and body armor to opposition forces in Syria, and the UN has announced that the number of Syrian refugees who fled the conflict has reached 1 million, half of whom are children, many of whom are spilling into Jordan. Unless some kind of agreement can be reached between the two sides, that number is only likely to grow. Now we have also seen the infamous footage of the Free Syrian Army commander, Abu Sakr, a.k.a. Khaled al-Hamad, eating what appears to be the heart of a dead Syrian soldier. This is the sort of thing that people are fleeing. People are dying. People are losing their lives in leaps and droves over there, so they're fleeing as fast as they can. But what's happening is that they're spilling into the country. They're spilling into Jordan. It's a very tiny country. That I believe the population of Jordan is something like 3 million. It's a very tiny country. They are at their wits' end as to what to do with these refugees that are spilling in from Syria. They are literally running out of money. They can't afford this. So they have interred these people in refugee camps. They're not allowed to leave the camps. So essentially, these are becoming small cities, and within these camps is also becoming, how shall I put this? They're ruling themselves, and they are ruling. It's a mess. What's going on is that there is no structure. There is nothing. The Syrians are starving themselves. They don't have two dimes to rub together either. And like I say, Jordan is stretched to the limits. They just cannot afford to take care of all these people. They are begging the West to help out. And the United States, Canada, we are trying to help out as best we can. But the UN says that everybody is running out of money because of this. So get prepared because there is no end in sight to this exodus. There is no end in sight for any relief from Jordan, nothing. It's a mess. So essentially what's happening is that people in these camps, they are They are so poor. Like I say, they don't have anything. They're so poor, they're marrying off their daughters into forced marriages, sham marriages, so on and so forth. Some are as young as 13 years old. They even have marriage brokers, and there is one in particular. Her name is Umajad, and she is constantly on her cell phone. She calls herself a marriage broker, but in reality, she's selling Syrian girls to men looking for brides at bargain prices. Now, she's taking one phone call here, and she's saying into the cell phone, of course she's been in a camp for a month. I guess the client was wondering if, is she good looking? Now, for many families living in Jordan's refugee camps, selling their daughters into marriage is the only way to survive. Across the Middle East, it is the custom for the groom to pay for the bride's family, but their desperation is being exploited because often the marriages are a sham and just a way to have sex, and some marriages last only weeks. Now, Umajad, she gets a cut for every match she makes, and young virgins fetch up to $5,000. You want me to get a younger one, 13, 14? Now, she was asked, how does it feel to marry off a 13-year-old girl? And she replies, don't ask me, ask the families. It's the parents who feel like it's a knife in their hearts, but what can they do? We're in a state of war. Well, you know what? I'm really not too comfortable with that response, Umajad. You are making money off of this, and this is exactly what I am telling my listeners. These girls are being exploited. Not only are they running for their lives from Syria and trying to seek some sort of peace in these camps, you are exploiting them. As a woman, I don't know how the hell that makes you feel. I think that you are nothing but evil. You don't care about these girls, so don't even pretend that you do. You have no interest in them whatsoever. There's one young lady here that was interviewed. She's 17 years old. Her name is Aya. She fled Syria with her family just under a year ago. She was sold to a 70-year-old man from Saudi Arabia for $3,500, and he left her after a month. She said that month was like a nightmare. She spent half of it crying. This elderly husband wouldn't let her talk to her family very much. She said she had no choice, though. And, of course, like I say, Umajid, she feels bad for the girls, but she also does not make any apologies because it's the only way for me to make a living. Syrians can't work in Jordan. What are we supposed to do? Steal? Kill? No, you just sell 13-year-olds. You're apples and oranges here. Now, she was asked if she would marry off her own daughters at 13, and she said, impossible. I would die for them. I would sell my eyes before I sold my kids. But everyone's drowning. It's a high price to pay in a society that preaches such high value on a woman's honor. Really? Aya says she feels ashamed by what's happened to her. The feeling, it never really leaves her, she says. If I could go back and just one month in time, but her innocence is lost forever. Her country is at war with no hope of an end, and there is no going back for her. Now, I want to play for you a short clip, and this is of Umajad. Just one moment.
Umajad's cell phone rarely stops ringing these days. She calls herself a marriage broker. In reality, she sells Syrian girls to men looking for brides at bargain prices. Of course she's thin, she told this client. She's been in the camp for a month. For many families living in Jordan's refugee camp, selling their daughters into marriage is the only way to survive. Across the Middle East, it is the custom for the groom to pay the bride's family. But their desperation is being exploited. Often the marriages are a sham, just a way to have sex. some last only weeks. Majid gets a cut for every match she makes. Young virgins fetch up to $5,000. You want me to get a younger one? She asks this caller. 13? 14?
How does that make you feel to marry off a 13-year-old girl?
Don't ask me, ask the families, she told us. It's the parents who feel it like a knife in their heart. But what can they do? We're in a state of war. 17-year-old Aya fled Syria with her family just under a year ago. She was sold to a 70-year-old man from Saudi Arabia for $3,500. He left her after a month. This month was like a nightmare. I spent half of it crying. He didn't let me talk to my family much, she told us. But I had no choice. Majid makes no apologies for her business. This is the only way for me to make a living, she said. Syrians can't work in Jordan. What are we supposed to do? Steal? Kill?
Do you have any daughters? Would you be willing to marry them off at 13 years old?
Impossible. I would die for them. I would sell my eyes before I sold my kids, she told us. But everyone's drowning. It's a high price to pay in a society that places such high value on a woman's honor.
Do you feel ashamed by what's happened to you?
Yes, very. This feeling really never leaves me, she said. If I could only go back in time, just 1 month. But for Aya, her innocence lost and her country at war, there is no going back. Clarissa Ward, CBS News, Amman, Jordan.
And for those in the chat room, if you want to take a look at that video, I put the link there for you. For those of you who are listening on other devices or listening in archive, I also have that link and the videos on my blog at redfoxblogger.blogspot.com. So if you want to do that. Now, like I say, this Majid is a real piece of work. Like I say, she's part of the exploitation business of these young ladies. But there is more, there's a lot more to it. Like I say, Jordan doesn't know what to do with all these people. They can't afford them. They're not getting much help. They're not getting much financial aid. They are really taxing Jordan to the limits, and there is a lot of resentment amongst the Jordanian people regarding this. Jordanian lawmaker, his name is Hustafa Hemeran. He says that there is a lot of resentment. They do not want these refugees around us, and they certainly are not allowed to want. They're not allowed to work. They're not allowed to interact in wider society. That's why they're being kept in these what are essentially internment camps. Okay. Now, there's a lot of worries, too, about the collapse of the Assad regime in Syria, because President Assad, if his regime falls, as bad as this guy is, if his regime falls, the Muslim Brotherhood are going to be moving right in. Now, Assad's father, his name was Hassef al-Assad. He subdued the Muslim Brotherhood uprising in the early 1980s with counterinsurgency military force. This is the same tactic that Assad is trying to use, but it's not working out well. The Muslim Brotherhood have already made promises that they will indeed return to Syria, and that is the main concern, because if the Assad regime collapses, the Muslim Brotherhood will move right in, and it will never find the freedom and democracy that the Syrian people so desperately crave. Now, here are some concerns. Oops, sorry about that. Lost my... Oh, I got a pop-up. Oh, I gotta love it when that happens. Oh, you want to buy insurance from ING Direct?
This is the fastest-growing city in Jordan. Dusty and impoverished, this city is actually a refugee camp. More than 500,000 Syrians have flooded into this tiny country of 6 million. That's the equivalent of 26 million refugees arriving in the U.S., the entire population of Texas. In a country that can hardly support its own population, the refugees are putting a strain on Jordan's water and electricity supplies.
What we call guest labor.
Jordanian lawmaker Mustafa Hamarneh told us there's growing resentment against the refugees.
This is really the first time where we hear people in this country very, very loudly articulating views against opening our borders to receive more and more Syrian refugees.
So Jordanians are really starting to resent Syrian refugees?
Yes, unfortunately, yes.
The feeling of resentment is shared by the Syrians.
Riots and protests have become a regular occurrence here at the Zaatari refugee camp. Residents tell us that they're tired of these wretched living conditions and of being made to feel like they're prisoners.
Refugees in the camps cannot leave, fueling tensions. Jordan's concerns are not limited to the refugee crisis. If the Assad regime falls, there are fears the fighting could spill over into Jordan, destabilizing a key ally of the U.S.
Do you think Jordan is adequately prepared for a post-Assad Middle East?
It depends on who takes over. If we're talking about these extremists, nobody in the region is prepared.
There are a lot of things to prepare for, and Clarissa Ward is joining us in Jordan tonight. Clarissa, there are U.S. military trainers training Jordanian forces there now. What do you know about that?
That's right, Scott. Jordan, of course, is a key ally of the U.S., as we know that there are currently about 200 U.S. military personnel here at an airbase near the Iraqi border. They're working closely with Jordanian troops, training them for a number of different scenarios that might occur after the Assad regime falls, or if the regime falls. And most importantly, perhaps, they're looking at the possibility of training them on how to go in and secure those chemical weapon sites.
Clarissa Ward in Amman tonight. Clarissa, thanks very much.
And like I say, please do try to get a hold of this link and keep it for your own files, because it is a comprehensive article. The clips are very eye-opening. The visuals are very disturbing. So please try to check that out. Now, you heard what Mustafa Hamarneh said. That's right. If Syria falls, if the Assad regime falls, it could easily spill over, and it will spill over into Jordan. There will be sectarian wars all over the place over this business in Syria. Syria is the most dangerous place on the planet right now. I am telling you, I do not have any hope for Syria. I'm pretty sure that the Assad regime will fall. I'm pretty sure the Free Syrian Army will ensure that. And I say, though, if they do, watch out. The Muslim Brotherhood will march right in. We have seen what happens when the Muslim Brotherhood marches in. We have seen what happened in Egypt. We've seen what happens in other regions where the Muslim Brotherhood gets their hot little hands on the government buttons. The Muslim Brotherhood, though, like I say, they've been sitting around very patiently since 1928. They were outlawed in Egypt. They were outlawed in Syria. But they are now sitting in power in Egypt. It won't be too long before they are sitting in power in Syria. That is my opinion. That's not, and that could very well be fact. I thought I would just bring you this story. It is a tragic story. It's a story of women. It's a story of little girls who are being sold into sham marriages. Essentially, they are being sold into prostitution. You heard the story of Aria, or Aya, my apologies, the 17-year-old. This is her life. This is what she was subjected to. She cannot go back. Essentially, her life is ruined. I'm sure her life is hardened. A lot of people, their lives have been destroyed over this, for the religion, all within the religion of peace. Now, like I say, I may have a show tomorrow because I just want to get my ducks in a row, maybe put a couple of little clips together for you, put some notes together about what happened in the UK yesterday. But today, Jeff Mitchell, on his radio show, East Anglian's EDL radio show. It's on, actually, in about 5 minutes, guys, so get over there. He will be discussing this on his program, and he will probably be much more comprehensive than I could be. So try to be there and listen to Jeff as he brings you what is going on over there in the UK regarding these two Islamists who slaughtered a soldier in the streets. Now, I'm going to leave you on that. I am down to my last 5 minutes. I'm not going to play my normal closing out song. I'm going to actually play something for you that I have here, and I just want to find it if I can. I'm not too sure if I do. I have it right here in front of me. This is a new network. This is a new, actually, essentially, it's a CD. It is full of music from people who are anti-Islamic. They have put a lot of artists have got together. They have put the CD together. And I will, as the song plays out, I will put the link in the chat room for you. But this is a song I do want to close out with instead of the normal closing song, so please take a listen.
Appeasement. Dressed up as political compromise. It's immediate. The benefits seem immediate
and popular.
And tangible.
Profitable.
Peace. At what price? But is it not an illusion? Are we not kidding ourselves? I'm just staving off the day of reckoning. Can evil ever be compromised? Ever be compromised? Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on.
Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on. Evil will live on.
Do we sacrifice our principles in the name of diplomacy?
Tolerance.
Intolerance. Shake hands with those who hate us. Can they ever be satisfied?
Could a foreign flag yet fly over Paris, London, Rome, and Washington?
They want to take over, dominate their neighbor, teaching demand, it's from the culture requiring capitalistic hunger-ness. Make men blind.
Will democracy last long? Or will it waste, exhaust, and murder itself? Will democracies commit suicide?
Joining me, everybody. Have a wonderful afternoon. Like I say, I may see you here tomorrow afternoon. If not, you can always hear me in my regular time slot. That is Mondays and Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please check out Red Fox blogger.blogspot.com. Goodbye, everybody.